Want to have your own business but don't want to start from scratch? Franchising might be the answer you're looking for. Welcome to the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show, the show that brings you thought leaders in business, franchising, and high-performance personal development. Whether you're a buyer, seller, franchisee, franchisor, or consultant, find everything you need to know about franchising right here. Own a business without the pain and financial losses that come with creating it. Find the time, freedom, and financial independence you can have through entrepreneurship. Learn how franchising can help you get there. Listen up and get ready for another episode of The Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.
Welcome to The Level Up Show with Nick Lopez, where we get the absolute pleasure of learning from thought leaders in business, franchising, and high performance personal development. Today's guest goes without exception. He's a very successful entrepreneur, savvy franchise operator. In fact, he's been very instrumental in helping multiple national franchise brands grow. He also routinely hosts a podcast show himself called Path to Freedom. But more importantly, he's an incredible matchmaker as he's a franchise consultant with one of the world's best franchise networks in Franchoice, Wes Barefoot. Welcome to the show.
Nick, I feel like I need to write you a check for that really nice intro. How much do I owe you? I appreciate it.
Well, I
appreciate the kind words, man. And always a pleasure chatting with you. And really appreciate the opportunity to come on your show. I was very excited when I heard you were starting a show. So nice work.
Oh, yeah. It's all about helping others level up. And you're a perfect person to have on the show. My gosh. Wow. So yeah, everything I said is well deserved.
Well, I appreciate that. I love the name of the show, though, Level Up. I think that's a really good name and a really good mission.
It's what life's all about, leveling up.
Let's go. I'll tell you a real quick story. I was going to wear a shirt today that I thought would be appropriate for this. And it says, growth until the grave or something like that. And unfortunately, it was a white shirt and one of my kids spilled chocolate milk on it this morning. So,
so life maybe next the dad.
Time. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, my gosh, you've clearly had this incredible career in franchising. I wouldn't necessarily say that people raise their hand and say, I'm going to be in franchising, right? There's a saying, franchising has a way of finding you. And yeah. So I'm curious, how did franchising find you, Wes?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's interesting being in franchising and talking to people that have been in it for a long time, because everyone does have an interesting story of how they kind of fell backwards into franchising. To your point, no one really seeks it out. So my story is no different in that I did fall backwards into franchising, and really just kind of a lucky coincidence of events and introductions. And it's opened so many doors since then. So I got out of college in 2009. For those that can remember that time frame, not exactly ideal timing to be a kid out of college with no real work experience and going to find it. But I was able to get a job with a large corporation called Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Most people here have probably heard of it. They have what they call a management trainee program. And so they hire kids right out of college. The only requirement is that you have to have a four-year degree. And I did that for about 3 years and kind of moved up through the ranks, got into a management level. So I really did, through that, get a taste of kind of what the corporate grind was going to be like. And there was a period where I was a year to a year and a half in and gotten my first couple of promotions with Enterprise. And at that point in time, my long-term vision was, hey, I want to be a group rental manager or whatever the titles were. I wanted to keep climbing that corporate ladder. But as I did it more and as I learned from some of the managers that I had, I kind of got to see how much of a bottleneck you can run into in corporate America if you want to stay with the same company. I was working for guys that had been with the company for 15 years or more, and they'd kind of hit a ceiling at a certain level. And even if they were going to move up, they had to be willing to uproot their family and move to wherever in the country the position was open, right? So through all of that, I did kind of, I think, luckily figure out earlier in my career than a lot of people do that I didn't necessarily want to sign up for 20 plus years of that corporate grind. So that really just kind of got my wheels turning. I got some amazing experience in the process, right? Like, I'm very thankful for the time I spent there. I got to learn how to interact with people. I got to learn how to think on my feet. I got to learn how to hire, train, and manage people. First got experience in actually looking at a profit and loss statement and understanding how all of that works. So it's great experience. Glad I did it. Glad I'm not still doing it. Moved back to Wilmington, North Carolina, where I live now. And just by chance, got introduced to a couple of guys that had founded a company called 101 Mobility. And I just got introduced to them through what are now my in-laws. And this was a young company at the time. They had started franchising the business a year or two prior to me meeting them. So they had a handful of franchisees. And they were just in growth mode, right? They were looking for young people that were hungry. I didn't know the first thing about franchising. Certainly had no idea that it would play such an instrumental role in my professional development. But it seemed like a cool opportunity. It had a lot more of that kind of startup feel than coming from a huge company like Enterprise did. And I hit it off with the founders. So they hired me. I think my original title was franchise support specialist or something like that. But I was basically the person in the home office that was responsible for helping the franchisees with anything, right? Like, I was just the main point of contact. Instead of franchisees having a directory of, well, here's who we reach out to about marketing, or here's who we reach out to about the software or whatever, is just Wes is your guy. If Wes doesn't have the answer, he'll go get it for you, or he'll put you in touch with the right person. That was a really good experience for me because, number one, I just started learning how franchising works, right? And understanding that dynamic of the relationship between the franchisor and the franchisees. It also forced me to dive into that business and really learn every aspect of that business, which helped me as I kind of grew through the ranks in that particular company. So kind of got to become a jack of all trades within that business just because I had to familiarize myself with so many different parts of the business in order to do that job and help those franchisees. So that was great. Developed some really good relationships. Still stay in touch with a lot of those franchise owners today. I'm business partners with one of the founders of that brand today, which we can maybe touch on a little bit later, and really good friends with the CEO of that company. He's gone on to be a friend and mentor. So from there, as that brand started growing, they opened up some other opportunities for me, but I don't want to get ahead if you've got some other specific questions. So I'll pause and see if you want to unpack any of that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think something that's interesting is you talked about Enterprise's training program, very well known and very high quality, and they have a great path to keep leveling up throughout your career, that corporate grind, if you will. You'd said that the corporate grind really wasn't for you. Why?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it was, and I can look back at it now and pretty confidently say, like, I had realized that's not what I wanted to do for my entire career. I don't know if it was so clear to me at the time, the way it all kind of came about. So without getting too into the weeds, I'm from North Carolina, grew up in North Carolina, went to college in North Carolina, met the girl that is now my wife in North Carolina, but she went to college in Louisiana at LSU. She's a couple years younger than me. So I get out of college, I go to Baton Rouge to be with her while she finishes school. So that's where I started working for Enterprise. And I'd gotten myself up to the branch manager level there. We decided to move back to Wilmington when she got out of college. And I was able to transfer with Enterprise, but I had to go back to almost the very beginning of the management trainee program. I wasn't able to keep the same level of seniority that I had worked my way up to. So that just put a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. So if that wouldn't have happened, who knows? Maybe I'd still be working at Enterprise. I don't think that's the case, but it's impossible to say. But that's really what got my wheels turning in terms of looking at other opportunities. And when I did meet these guys at 101 Mobility, it just felt different, right? It felt like a startup. It was fast paced. Everyone's opinion was appreciated, right? It felt like I had more impact because it was a smaller organization. And as I mentioned before, I just had some foreshadowing with what a long-term career with Enterprise or any big corporation, right? Because it does start to bottleneck if you want to keep working your way up. It becomes those positions are fewer and further between. It's more competition to get them. And the thing with Enterprise was really just I'd seen a guy that had four kids and 18 years with the company pick up and move to like just so he could get a promotion. And I'm like, wow. I didn't have kids or anything at the time, but I'm like, that seems a little crazy to me. So I think it was really just some of that. I mean, my dad had more of a traditional career, 40 years in the pharmaceutical industry, most of that with one company, and he did well, provided a great life for us, but it just didn't really click with me. I just couldn't envision myself spending that much time working for one company.
Yeah. And has your life changed, right? Moved to Death Valley.
Yeah. Go Tigers. You know, real Tigers.
Real Tigers.
Real Tigers. There's a lot of imposter Tigers out there.
Old Joe Burrow.
Those were the good days. It's not looking so hot this season, but that's for another time.
Give it a year or two. They'll be all right.
Yeah.
Well, life's taking you one way and the bureaucracy, the red tape of a corporation's holding you back. It really seemed pretty unfair. But thankfully, found this startup environment with 101 Mobility and hit it off with the founder and were assigned this support specialist role, go-to for support. Such an important role. What was that like, supporting owners?
Yeah, it was good. And at the time, it was too crazy because there was, I want to say like 6 or 7 franchisees at the time. So it wasn't like I had to go out and develop relationships with 100+ franchisees. And that kind of gave me, I guess, a little more bandwidth to really dive in and learn what I needed to learn to effectively support these franchise owners. But I do remember kind of starting and young company, right? So it wasn't like I had this very clear job description. They kind of just were like, hey, here's some basic training. Here's the general idea of what your role is. Go get them, Tiger. That sort of thing. So I remember kind of like first day sitting there and I had a little cubicle and I'm like, well, what do I do? Right. And so finally, I was like, if I'm going to be supporting these franchise owners, I guess I ought to reach out to them and introduce myself. Right. So that was kind of where I started. That was really good experience for me. And then as the brand kept growing, developing relationships with these franchise owners. And I think the biggest thing that came from that for me was, as I mentioned earlier, really understanding that dynamic in franchising that's different from most other types of businesses, right? Where these franchise owners, at the end of the day, were my clients in that business, right? I was there to serve them and to add value to them. And franchise owners, right? I mean, there's at some times going to be friction between the franchisor and the franchise owner. It's inevitable. And so me at a pretty young age, learning how to navigate that, right? Where you can't tell a franchise owner what to do necessarily because they own a business. You can give advice, you can make suggestions, but especially someone in my position at the time, I couldn't say, this is what you need to do, right? So I think that was valuable for me to just learn how to navigate those types of relationships. And through that, I kind of got introduced to, because I started helping out the guy that was doing franchise development. So I got a little bit of insight into how that whole world works and the process that somebody goes through to actually evaluate a franchise business and do the due diligence. Got introduced to the wild and exciting world of franchise consulting or franchise brokering, which I can remember piqued my interest at a very, like, as soon as I figured out, oh, there's actually essentially brokers or consultants that help match people up with franchises. I remember some of them coming into the office for like a discovery day, and it really piqued my interest. So it's kind of interesting to look back, and now I'm in that world as well. So yeah, a lot of good things that came from it, but it really, because it was a startup, it was a lot of me taking initiative and me kind of really just figuring out where can I add the most value. And I think that has served me well.
But developing that art of being in business with other business owners, you know, it's not that bureaucracy or that hierarchy of this is how things are done and do them at this time on this day. It's really a partnership and it's a value-driven relationship, meaning providing value in the form of coaching, training, supporting that owner is a lot different than telling them what to do in, I guess, on the flip side of the coin, more traditional corporate setting. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So clearly learning right in the core of a franchise system, what were some of the things that you realized made you successful in that, in coaching and helping an owner from a support standpoint?
That's a good question. I don't know that I've really thought about that, but I was liked by the franchise owners. And so I think that was a big part of what translated to success. Because in that type of role, there weren't really like any metrics that I was being gauged by, right? It wasn't like, oh, Wes solved X number of problems this week for franchisees. So A+, you get a raise. It wasn't really like a bar necessarily. I guess the metric was, did the franchisor, did my bosses get good feedback from the franchisees that like I was actually a resource and someone that they could count on to help? So I think part of it was me just understanding that like, hey, if I'm going to be supporting these people, I need to really get to know them, right? And as I developed relationships and kind of started to understand how different franchise owners operated and different personalities and stuff like that, then I could tailor my approach, right? Like there were some franchise owners that I could have a conversation with in a very different way, but it would land. Whereas if I'd had the same conversation with another owner, it would not have landed, right? So I kind of learned that you have to communicate with people in different ways, depending on just their personality and their style. So kind of, I guess, just naturally figured some of that. And the other thing was, I took it very seriously that I'm your one point of contact, right? I don't want you to have to make multiple phone calls to get an answer to a question or to figure something out. That's my job, right? So you call me, you let me know what the issue is, and I'll let you know up front. I won't try to BS you. Like if I don't know the answer, I'm not going to pretend like I do, but I'm going to go find the answer for you, right? So it's kind of interesting now. I don't think I've ever thought about this until we're talking through it, but what I do as a consultant now, I think of it as connecting dots, right? I don't sell anything. I connect dots, right? I work with people that have an interest in business ownership. I work with a lot of great franchise companies like yours, and I connect dots, right? And I facilitate. And that's a lot of what that role really did. Every day it was a little bit different. I didn't necessarily go in knowing, all right, this is what I've got today. It was kind of like, all right, what's going to pop up and how can I handle it? So I probably didn't realize any of this at the time, but looking back on it now, like what a good experience to have, right? I mean, just problem solving, relationship development, while at the same time getting exposure to a young emerging franchise company and everything that comes with that. And it opened my eyes to the world of franchising. And it got me thinking more entrepreneurially, right? Because I'm talking to all of these business owners. A lot of those early franchisees in that brand, they had other businesses too, right? So I'm learning from very entrepreneurial people, including the founders of the brand. So it got me thinking more entrepreneurially, right? And it got me thinking that, well, hey, if these people are doing it, like I could do this too at some point.
Yeah, it starts with the relationship and that person. Every person's different. Building trust. Each person's unique. Build the relationship, establish the trust. And then that is obviously going to help you connect those dots. And that's where the magic happens. So many owners are right in the middle of it. It's not always easy to see above the trees, and specifically relating to that person, building that relationship, establishing that trust, connecting those dots. I love it.
Those are things that it doesn't matter what you're doing in life or in business. Those are things that translate, right? That's a skill set that you can't learn in a classroom. But if you have that skill set, it'll benefit you in so many ways going forward. It translates to anything.
Well said. Well, I want to change gears here. I know with 101 Mobility, you eventually started helping on a national level, acquiring national account. Can you share with us what that was like and some of the success that came from that? My gosh, I can only imagine that giving franchise owners national accounts was a good thing and probably helped with that trust and connecting dots.
Well, it did. And I think that role would have been a lot harder had I not been in that support role first, because I was kind of pioneering that particular position with this company, right? It wasn't like there was a former accounts guy and I took their place. It was literally, I mean, it was just as the brand was growing, I mean, probably less franchisees than Lime has today, right? We were starting to get to a little more of a national footprint, but we weren't there yet. I mean, we're probably talking 30, 40 franchisees, pretty good coverage throughout the country. So the guy that was the CEO of the company at the time, Dave Pazgan. So when I got into that role, I started reporting to Dave. Dave's to this day, probably the smartest individual I've ever met. I've learned a lot from him. I can call him a really good friend. He and I own a franchise in the same brand together now. But anyways, I remember being intimidated in a role reporting to Dave. And I can also remember, like, if Dave, he's, like I said, very smart, but he's also the type of guy that, like, he just wants you to figure it out. He's not going to micromanage. He's not going to give you a ton of detail or a ton of instructions. I can remember sitting down with him and him talking to me about this position, and it was very vague, right? He's like, we're kind of getting big, and like, there's some national relationships out there that we should go leverage, and you've done a really good job and the franchisees like you, and so we think you're the guy for this role. If it's interested, we can talk more. So I'm like, yeah, it sounds great. These are the exact words he said. Here's an Amex, go turn some rocks over and see what you can come up with. That was it, right? And so 101 Mobility is not a cell phone company. A lot of people think it is. We were doing wheelchair ramps, stair lifts, platform lifts. It was accessibility and mobility equipment for elderly people or people with physical disabilities. But we did a lot of work with the VA hospital. There's a lot of organizations that operate out there nationally that could have some synergy with a business like 101 Mobility, but we didn't really have any game plan or any direction. So because of that, I went down a lot of rabbit holes, and we ended up figuring out, okay, what are the types of national accounts that can actually drive more revenue to the franchisees? Because that's the whole point, right? Is how can we create some relationships at the national level? They're going to funnel business down to the franchisees, and that's going to be business that they likely would not have been able to tap into had it not been for the national relationship, right? But because we didn't have a ton of direction when we started this program, there was some trial and error, right? So I had to lean pretty heavily on my relationships with the franchisees when I would come to them and say, hey, this is an organization that I've been talking to. This is where there could be some opportunity, but I need a couple franchisees to kind of help me pilot this for a few months to see if there's anything there, right? I needed to get the buy-in from the franchisees. I needed them to be willing to try some different things from how they'd always done business before. And there were some duds, right? There were some times where I asked franchisees, hey, go out and meet with this person or go out and look at this job. And it just didn't end up being a great use of their time. But through that, we learned. And through that, we figured out what did make sense for us at a national account level. And I was probably in that role for a year and a half or so, handed it off to someone else. So they're still running national accounts today, and they've built a lot from where they were when I stepped out. But I want to say in the first year, we figured out how to drive at least $1.5 million or $2 million in additional revenue throughout the system. And I think it's built significantly since then. So but there was some success, but there was some trial and error. And I think a lot of that success was really just a fact that franchisees trusted me. They knew I was out there trying to find additional opportunities for them, but they were willing to participate and help us figure it out. Because if you're setting up a national account, one bad apple can ruin it for everyone, right? You got 80 franchisees doing a great job and one or two franchisees do a crappy job, ignore the lead or the opportunity, the request or whatever, it could blow the whole program up. Right. So that was another good experience for me. One, just getting out there and having these types of bigger picture conversations and really just taking initiative on my own, very little direction, kind of figuring out what made sense for me to prioritize. Because again, can't tell a franchisee they have to do this. Right. So it's figuring out, how do you navigate? Hey, I got this relationship. It's showing potential, but I don't necessarily have data to prove that yet. You're dealing with a franchisee that's maybe set in their ways or whatever. And so how do you convince them that it's worth their time to try this without being able to tell them that they have to try it? So I think I kind of developed a skill for navigating those types of situations.
And any growing franchise is innovating. And so anything that's being innovated, you're on the forefront of it, and there's going to be trial and error. And with that trial and error, there has to be trust and a relationship there. Otherwise, it's not going to be a successful program. So
yeah, man, like one of the brands we own right now, just to build on that a little bit, is still what I would consider an emerging franchise. I mean, they've probably well over 100 franchisees at this point, but some of those are not yet open. I mean, the brand itself's no more than 2.5 years old, right? So they're at a point now where they're, same thing I was doing at 101, figuring out where's there an opportunity for us in national accounts, what works, what doesn't. Man, I've heard franchisees complaining, right? Because they've rolled out a couple of relationships that at the end of the day, weren't going to be game changers for any franchisees or really move the needle. So I've heard franchisees complaining like, oh, what a waste of time. I can't believe they want us to do this. And I'm like, hold up. Like, I'd be complaining if they weren't out there trying to figure out this type of stuff. I don't care if we tried working with this one organization and it didn't pan out. I like that they're thinking like this, and I like that they're trying and they're turning over rocks and seeing what sticks, right? Since then, they've rolled out a relationship with Lowe's Home Improvement, which is going to be a game changer for us, right? So to your point, any emerging brand, any mature brand should always be looking for ways to innovate, but the franchisees need to be willing to participate in that.
Yeah, any growing company or any company that wants to remain relevant, otherwise you're going to be Kodak or Blockbuster, right?
And exactly.
So at the core of a franchise, unlike a corporation, it's a partnership. You can't be a consumer as a franchise owner, right? If you're a consumer and you have demands and expectations and you're banging your hand on the table and you have low trust and you're not invested in the relationship, that's a consumer, right? I'm an owner, I pay a fee, and I'm full of demands. That's one way to be a franchise partner or a franchise owner. The flip side of the coin is a franchise partner. And a partner is much different in that there's an understanding that we're in business together. And if we're on the forefront of a program, we're innovating, there's going to be trial and error. And as long as there is communication in that and the franchise owner is heard in that innovation, that's only a good thing. And maybe as a franchise owner, you're not that interested in being at the cutting edge, but some owners are. But clearly, it's important for franchise owners to want accountability and have high expectations. But there's a balance there. We talk about this all the time in our franchise, being a consumer versus being a franchise partner is a very big difference there, a partner versus a consumer. And that goes back to what you were talking about. That goes back to the relationship and the trust. And that's the responsibility of the franchisor to create that community where the franchise owners are heard and they're involved and that they're invested in the franchise owner's success. That's where it all starts. So,
and encouraging innovation, right? I think that's important. I mean, talking about 101 Mobility, I could give you an example where one of the early franchisees started renting wheelchair ramps to people that had a knee surgery, right? So they needed it for a few months while they were rehabbing, but they didn't need to buy a wheelchair ramp because they weren't going to need it long term. That was new at the time. Well, today, probably close to 10 years later, that's a staple in that business. And they've got franchisees, individual franchisees doing millions of dollars a year in rental revenue. That's just in addition to their core business, right? But that came from one franchisee having an idea. The franchisor didn't shut it down. They said, yeah, let us know what we can do to help you figure out if there's something to this, right? And now it's a staple part of that business. And it's one of the most attractive parts of that business because the margins on the rentals are insane. So there's so many examples like that out there. And as a franchise consultant, part of what I'm doing is I'm connecting dots and matching people up is I have these types of conversations with people, right? Because there are people that are going to do better in a franchise where they get to be more of a pioneer and they get to be more innovative and think outside of the box. Because there are franchises out there, like, I mean, McDonald's is an easy example, right? Like, you're not going to be the McDonald's franchisees. It's like, well, what if we try pizza again? They're going to be like, yeah, no, we've got the program. It works really well. Like, you just do our program. Like, there's not a ton of room to innovate in some of these types of franchises. And that's what some people are looking for. I just want to plug in. I want to have a exact formula that I follow. And as long as I do that, I can pretty safely predict success. Those models are out there and those models are good for some people, but there's also people that are going to thrive and do a lot better and be a lot happier in more of an emerging type brand. And not even emerging, right? I mean, a brand like Lime, 10 years from now, you won't be emerging anymore, but you'll still be encouraging your franchise owners to think outside of the box and try new things. So I think also the type of business plays a little bit of a role in how much you can keep innovating in some regards. But it's something I talk about with people, right? And I take into account as I'm making recommendations.
What an interesting balance there, right? The power of entrepreneurship and innovation, but the truth behind the model working and committing and executing on it. It's a very unique relationship that a franchise model is. So thanks for that, Wes. I appreciate that, your wisdom there on the operation side and on the national accounts and innovating.
It was fun to talk about. I haven't really spent a whole lot of time talking about some of those earlier parts of my career in franchising. So nice little walk down memory lane.
Well, you're currently an owner in Shelf Genie. You're also a franchise consultant with FranChoice. So I'm curious, how are you able to do both? You're running this franchise business, it's successful, but yet you're also doing what you talked about earlier. You're helping individuals find the right fit for them in whatever season of life they're in.
Yeah. Well, the easy answer to that question is your show is called Leveled Up. I should start a show called Married Up. So my wife is amazing. She's smart. She's driven. So Shelf Genie, the first franchise business that we got into as franchisees, that's her business baby, right? So the way I got into that from 101 Mobility, I met the founder of Shelf Genie. They needed someone to take over their franchise development arm of the business. So that door opened up for me. I went to work for Shelf Genie. About a year into that, we just had our first kid. My wife was in the pharmaceutical industry. She gets laid off, literally out on maternity leave. They lay off 50% of their sales force. She's included in it. Blessing in disguise, right? Because she was very, I guess you would call it, anxious about going back to work full time after having our first kid and putting our daughter in daycare full time and that sort of thing. Like, she was really torn between being driven and being successful in her career and wanting to get back to that and feeling like she was going to have to leave our baby daughter at the time too soon, right? So that actually happened like 2 weeks before she was supposed to come off of maternity leave. So I'd been at Shelf Genie for about a year, helping other people evaluate the business and get into that business. There was a lot I liked about the business model. It wasn't a super expensive franchise to get up and running. We didn't have a ton of financial resources at the time, but it's something we'd been talking about because I'd been in franchising for a little while at this point. And she and I had been kicking around some ideas. We were selling some stuff on Amazon and just talking about ways of how can we keep leveling up, but not through working for other people indefinitely. So long story short, Shelf Genie happened to have territory available where we live, Wilmington, North Carolina. We bought the Wilmington, North Carolina and the Myrtle Beach, South Carolina market. My wife, that was her full-time working focus, was building Shelf Genie, right? I stayed at Shelf Genie corporate for at least a year and a half after we started our franchise, right? So I really wasn't in a position to help a ton with her actually building our local business. Obviously, I knew the business pretty well. So big picture, strategic stuff, I could help, but I was traveling a lot. I had full-time job responsibilities, right? So that's really the main reason that I was able to transition into the consulting work that I do now, is because my wife got the Shelf Genie business to a point where it was providing good, consistent income for us, which put me in a position where I could pretty comfortably go and resign from a job where I had a guaranteed base salary and good upside in commission and benefits and all of that, and start my consulting business. Now, since then, we've become franchisees with a second brand. So we also own a brand called Koala Insulation, what it sounds like. We do insulation work. That's been a really interesting experience for us because we have started and are operating that business as what you would hear referred to as semi-absentee owners, right? So fast forward, we've got three kids, two under two right now. The Shelf Genie business is a multi-7-figure business, very lucrative for us. When we wanted to start a second franchise, we didn't want my wife, Kelly, taking her eye off of the ball with Shelf Genie. I had my consulting business going, which was going pretty well at the time. And I enjoy doing it. It's what I want to be doing, right? But we like the idea of having another franchise business. So this approach has forced us to really learn how to build a business without either of us being hands-on in it every single day, right? So we're about a year and a half into that. It's a 7-figure business. It's going really well. We've got a full-time GM. I've never stepped foot in an attic other than at training, and I don't plan to. Now, there's been some bumps in the road, right, to figure this out. And there's pros and cons to this approach of business ownership. And if you want to get into some of that, we can. But so anyways, that's how we now have two franchises, and I can still spend the vast majority of my working time consulting, doing the podcasts and things like that, the things that I enjoy doing, and it doesn't even feel like work. So in all likelihood, we'll continue adding franchises to our local portfolio. I don't see us stopping that anytime soon. In order to do so, my wife and I have to keep leveling up and getting better at managing, getting better at hiring the right people, setting the right expectations, managing and coaching, right? So that we've essentially got people in place that take ownership in the business that they're responsible for managing, because we can't be there all of the time. And that's how you scale, right? So there's people out there that have done this far better than we have, and we're looking to learn from those types of people, but we've learned a lot in the process to get to where we are today. And like I said, I love the name of your show, man. We want to keep learning, keep leveling up.
And the key there, it sounds like, to leveling up around scaling multiple franchise brands is having reliable, trustworthy people, qualified, great expectations, training them up, leveling up around those things. So is your wife still running Shelf Genie, or do you have a GM in place there as well?
Yeah, so she is still running Shelf Genie. Model's a little bit different than with like the installation business. It really wouldn't make sense to have a salaried manager there. But to my wife's credit, she's gotten that business to the point where she provides oversight. Most of her time in the business is coaching the salespeople, we call them designers, and then developing strategic relationships and kind of cultivating those relationships. So she's gotten it to a point where it's very flexible for her. She used to run a lot of the sales appointments herself in the very beginning. She hasn't run a sales appointment since our second child was born almost 2 years ago. So she's built a really good team. So it's pretty similar. I mean, I probably spend 3 hours a week in the installation business, and that's me working directly with our GM and doing one-on-ones with him and kind of coaching him. And my coaching with him is not insulation related. He knows a hell of a lot more about insulation at this point than I do. It's how to run the business. It's how to manage the cost. It's how to look at the KPIs and the other metrics we measure and figure out, all right, where do we have room to get better and how do we execute on that? So my wife's kind of gotten Shelf Genie to a similar point where her time spent and her activities in the business are very similar to that. With her, she's not working with one manager. She's working with the sales team. And then we've got people on the install side too. But the way we've been able to build these businesses out, and believe me, it's not perfect. It's not necessarily been a pretty process to get it here. There has been a lot of bumps in the road. There's been plenty of mistakes made, things that we would do differently now, knowing what we know now. But I mean, we could go away for 2-3 months. And as long as we've got internet, our businesses would keep running. It's not like we would be able to completely check out, but phone calls, emails, we could stay on top of it and things would keep running the way they are, with or without us. And I think that's one of the biggest skills any business owner can learn, assuming that scaling is part of their goal. Because as well as I know, it's where so many small business owners hit a bottleneck, right? Because too much of the business revolves around them and their ability to actually do the things that need to be done. And if you remove them from the picture, it all comes crashing down. So if we're talking business ownership, I think that's the biggest area that any business owner has when it comes to leveling up is, how do I get better and better and better at not being necessary? As crazy as that sounds, right?
Yeah, and coaching for the model and creating complete accountability around the model and pulling that back to KPIs so that it's objective. So when you're working with your GM, you can speak specifically to the business model and have an objective set of KPIs and more so work as a coach and provide support above and beyond what that GM is doing as they're so invested in the business. So, oh my gosh, it sounds like you're leveling up around those things and it's not easy. It's not only a science, but it's an art. So, my gosh,
it's not easy and it's hard to let go. Like, I've seen this, been interesting with our two businesses right now, our two franchises. My wife was intimately involved in Shelf Genie in the beginning, right? Knows that business inside and out, right? She had her hands in everything in that business. I mean, the business basically was her for the first year or so, right? She's built it out since then. But then you take Koala, where we started with a GM, right? Hired a GM before we even went to training, right? So he came to training with us. I mean, from day one, he was the guy. There was no question about it, right? It wasn't, hey, Wes is going to be in there running the show. That was the plan from day one. So it's interesting with these two things, because I've seen my wife really struggle at times to let go and delegate, right? Because at one point in time, it was her, right? And I think as a business owner, when you're that involved for a period of time, naturally, you're going to have this mentality of, well, no one's going to do it as good as me. And no one's going to care about it as much as me. And so it can be very difficult to let go, right? And that's why so many businesses never get beyond a certain point. And it makes sense, right? With our insulation business, I don't know enough to go in there and like kick my GM out and all of a sudden become the guy. Like, we'll never run that risk of me or my wife becoming bottlenecks in that business, because from day one, we essentially set it up so that wouldn't be an issue. So that's been interesting. But I think as we talk about leveling up and figuring out how to grow as a business owner, that's something that business owners have to get comfortable with. My wife calls it watching the train wreck happen, right? Like when she's training a new salesperson, it's going to be sloppy at times, right? You're going to miss out on some opportunities that if it was my wife in there running the appointment versus new salesperson, my wife would have closed it, new salesperson doesn't, right? You have to get comfortable with things not being perfect, right? You have to be okay with that. And it doesn't mean that it won't be good forever or whatever. Hopefully it's temporary as your people get better and learn or whatever. But like, you have to be comfortable almost taking a short step back in order to grow, if that makes sense.
Yeah, letting go of the vine. It's so important in leveling up, going to that next level of scaling your business beyond just an owner-operator. Wes, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you for making the time and being on the show. Again, thank you.
Awesome. All right. Thank you for having me, man. Always excited to have the opportunity to chat with you. I learn something every time we talk, and you've been a guest on my podcast, so happy to be a chance to reciprocate. But yeah, man, I'm fired up every time we talk. I love what you're doing with Lime Painting. I'm a huge supporter of that brand and love that you're now bringing everything you've learned and bringing contacts to your Level Up show. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, keep leveling up, helping the world level up. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, Wes, how can they do that? Where can they find you?
Yeah, LinkedIn. I'm pretty active, just Wes Barefoot on LinkedIn. Mentioned I do have a podcast. It's called The Path to Freedom. You can find that on any of the major podcast platforms. Nick has been one of only a handful of guests that I've had on the show to two-peat. So he's in an elite category there. There's only one or two other people that I've had on the show more than once. So you can get some more of Nick on the podcast. And then I have a website. It's just path2frdm.com. So Path to Freedom, but kind of short form, and send you a link to it if that's easier. But yeah, got some information up there. But find me on LinkedIn is probably the easiest way.
You heard it right from Wes. Path to Freedom. Check him out on LinkedIn, his website. It's really been a pleasure, all the way going back to relationships and trust and connecting the dots, all the way to leveling up around scaling and putting a GM in place and supporting them so that as an owner, you can find your path to freedom. Wes, oh my gosh, it's been a pleasure. If you've been watching this and you agree, please like, subscribe, but more importantly, contribute to the conversation. Drop a comment. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, level up.
Let's go.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show. Remember, it's never too late to get started on your entrepreneurial journey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share if you enjoyed today's segment. Catch us again next week and visit limepainting.com for more of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.